Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 9, delivered on February 17, 2011. The title of this lecture is Volatility.
Today, volatility. This is the opus to a pair of lectures on the topic of risk. Volatility is a way of describing risk, and we will have different metrics we will use for measuring risk. Volatility is one of those, and by volatility, I will mean something specific. And the best way to do this is by demonstrating a problem where we measure volatility, and then I will end the podcast and hand out a worksheet that we will just hammer through together to make sure that you can do the formula and go from there. But imagine it this way. You, sir, are a bungee jumper. Yes. And we are going to tie a bungee cord, a 100-foot bungee cord, and we're going to tie it at the top of 1,000 foot above the canyon bridge. So you jump off this 100-foot bungee cord and you go boing, 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 twack, no. 100 feet, you're going boing, boing, boing. And you come back up and you say, that was a rush. Have you ever bungee jumped? Yeah. I found out there's something that they don't explain to you about bungee jumping. When you jump off, the bungee cord grabs your body, but your organs, they just keep going. That Newton's law of conservation of momentum, parts of you just keep going down. You know, your liver, you taste it in your eyes and things like that. Anyway, I concentrate on the lecture here. Okay, now let's take that same 100-foot bungee cord and we'll go to another bridge. You said that was a rush, so we go to another bridge. Now, this bridge is only 150 feet above the canyon. You jump off, boing, 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 and you'll notice you come back up. You know, I saw fish in the water. You noticed it more. Now, we're going to take you to a canyon, and there's a bridge that is 75 feet above. Okay. You jump off, and you go splat. Splat, splat. This sucks, man. Can we quit? Indeed, as the boing is the same in all three bridges. The boing was the same. But as you went lower, you experienced more boing for the boing. Okay? I don't know what the hell that meant, but you know what I mean. You see, and this is the thing with volatility. Now, it might not sound like what I described here has much to do with what I'm going to do here. But at the end of the day, you're going to find out that what creates volatility in cash flow is fixed expenses. Now, if your fixed expenses are small, then the volatility of sales is not magnified much by them. But if your fixed expenses are large, they pull you down to a lower bridge. And that means that they create more volatility. They magnify your volatility. The experience of volatility gets magnified more and more the lower you are. And fixed expenses lower you in a fixed way, in a rock-solid way. So you feel volatility more as your fixed expenses go up relative to your sales. I start this example, and I'll write some formulas here, but the best thing to do is to talk about how we plan and do essentially like a contingency planning. We might say, okay, the economy is going to do great next year. Well, we are not going to be total optimists. We have to look at different scenarios and how we are going to handle ourselves. Can we survive worst case scenario? Of course we'll survive the best case scenario. We want to know, can we also survive in an environment where things are not great? Think about the case now of Borders bookstores. You know that Borders just filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. One of the stores, the many stores that are closing, is one here in town, which pisses me off. But Borders is doing all this self-assessment, the blame. Well, we had $1 billion in debt. It was just terrible, all this. Well, yeah. You see, Barnes & Noble took a whack, too. If you looked at Amazon, Amazon didn't do all that great in the bad recession. And so really, when we are making plans, we have to think about what's the worst that could happen and how do we mitigate the worst that could happen. Barnes & Noble made it through. Borders didn't. It's just the way it is. And it has to do with, well, look at the worst case. How do we handle it so that we do not go tap city in the worst case? So we take an economy and we're going to say, okay, suppose that I create a five-state economy. Now, I'll say, okay, there is a state of the economy that we can say is great. And there's a 5% chance of that really booming economy. Now, in that booming economy, and I'm trying to think of how I would want to give you a number that would work for that. I wrote a couple numbers here. Let's say we have $1,500 would be our revenue. And then on the other side, let's say there's a 5% chance of a really bad economy. And in that economy, I wrote a number down here, but I don't think these are going to work. $500. Let's do it. $500. Okay? Now, there's a great economy that would be a 5% chance of happening, but there's a pretty good economy that could happen, and there is a 20% chance of that. And then on the other side, there was a really bad economy of 5%. And let's say the pretty good economy is $1,250 of sales revenue. And then the a really bad economy was 5%, $500. And a not good economy, let's say that has a 20% chance of happening. And in that not good economy, we'd have $750 of revenue. So we've got a really bad and a great, a not good and a pretty good. And now let's talk about the highest probability. It's not really bad, it's not great, it's not pretty good, and it's not not good. We can say, well, that economy is meh. 50%. And in that economy, we would have sales of $1,000. Now, the first of the metrics that we're going to want to work with would be what we call an expected value. An expected value is essentially a weighted average. We weight each of the possible scenarios by its probability of occurrence. In mathematical terms, we would call this expected value. And this is actually not very great terminology, but it's what the notation, but the book uses it, is the Greek letter mu, or mu. Mu? Okay, knock, knock, choke. Knock, knock.
Who's
interrupting cow. Go ahead. Moo! I know. Work with me, son. It's early in the comedy routine. It gets better. Will equal the sum from I equals 1, scenario 1 to scenario n, of the probabilities of scenario I times the cash flow in scenario I. That's fancy notation. It looks really cool when you leave your notes open when other people come over. You know. So what we go for here is, okay, we've got that. What does that mean in practice? It just means that we're going to take 0.05 times $500 plus 0.20 times $750 plus 0.50 times 1,000 plus 0.20 times 1,250 plus 0.05 times 1,500. Now, you'll notice that this is a symmetric distribution. So, not surprisingly, this mean will come out to be, this expected value will come out to be the center of the distribution, which will be the case if it's symmetric around that core, that central value. Okay, so we expect our cash flow to be $1,000. But it could be different. And we have to measure how much spread there is in the possibilities of money. So to do that, the next formula that I will use is what is called the standard deviation. Standard deviation, we write with a sigma, and it is the square root, well, I don't have to write that, I'm going to write it in just a formula, the square root of the sum, I could write a sigma, the sum of the probability of the scenarios from I equals 1 to the nth scenario, of the probability of scenario I times the cash flow in scenario I minus the mean squared. So in other words, we are going to crank through and add, essentially, take each scenario's cash flow minus the mean that we calculated above, square it, and then times it by the probability. And then we're going to add all of those up. Now, you'll notice, you should notice rather quickly that that's where the big pain in the ass comes from in this. It's because if you make a mistake along the way, you're dead. That's the end of the game. You might as well enroll in trucking school, which is a noble profession. And I'll write a recommendation. But just watch it. You've got to be careful with this. And like I said, Excel is so much better for this. But I've always been tempted to show you there are some tricks you can do on a TI 83 plus or TI 84 that shortens the routine up quite a bit. It involves using the tables that you can set up on the TI. But just beating this thing out, sigma, the standard deviation for this one would be the square root. See if I can get all of that in there. And make sure you can do this, because we're going to do a live fire one after this. I'll just give you a worksheet. We work on it. You can take it home and finish it up. But here's the deal. The probability, 0.05, times the first cash flow less the mean, quantity squared, 500, less the mean, that's 500 minus 1,000, quantity squared, plus 0.20 times that cash flow, 750, less 1,000, quantity squared plus the third scenario, 0.50 times 1,000 minus the mean, which is 1,000 quantity squared, plus the fourth scenario, 0.20 times 1,250 minus the mean quantity squared, plus 0.05 times 12 times 1,500 minus the mean quantity squared. You add all those up, take the square root. Now you might notice that there are actually, you're doing something over and over again here. Like for example, see these two? The first and the last term, they're going to be the same number. The second to last term and the second term are going to be the same. The one in the middle will come out to be a zero because it's 1,000 times minus 1,000 squared. So you really have to calculate just the first one and then times it by 2, plus the second one and times it by 2. And then take the square root of what you get after you do that. Watch it doing that because you can stumble. But do you see what I just said there? See how fast you can shorten it up. Because the first and the last terms are going to be the same, you could just do it once and double it. The second term and the second to last term will be the same, so you could just do it once and then double it. And the middle one is going to be zero, so you don't even have to worry about that. So you can collapse the gruelingness, for lack of a better word, a little bit. Well, actually a little more than a little bit, by following that routine. And I strongly encourage you, if you can, get the number. The number should come out to be about $223 or something like that, I think. If you work it out, it should come out to be 223.6068, around there. Now, what does that number mean? It's a measure of volatility. It's a measure, a spread measure. It's not the one that we'll use, but we can get to the one we use very quickly. But this one actually has its own use. That's actually kind of worth looking at for a second. But I want to make sure you can get that 223.6068. Now I'm going to show you what that number means. That's a standard deviation. If you have a symmetric distribution, that's shaped like a normal curve, a bell curve. The mean is right in the center. And if you were to take the mean minus the standard deviation, all the way up to the mean plus the standard deviation, get the two numbers there, you would know that there was a 67% chance that your cash flow would actually fall somewhere in there. In this case, if I took 1,000 minus 223.6068, and I hope I actually calculated that one, it comes out to be about 776 dollars and like 39 cents or along there, I guess. And if you took the mean, 1,000 plus that standard deviation of $223, you'd get, and 61 cents, you'd get $1,223.61. So what I can say is that the actual sales will have a 67% chance, or say probability, of being between $776.39 and $1,223.61. And that's because from the mean minus sigma up to the mean plus sigma, 67% of the distribution lies right in there. It's just the rule. It's the rule. And that comes from statistics, from probability theory. If you've got a bell curve, if you've got a bell, it will always be the case that 67% of the distribution is between the mean minus sigma and the mean plus sigma. It's just going to be that way. It's a rule of nature. And we apply that rule in business. I didn't pull the number out. I know a lot of times people say, well, where did that 67% come from? It's just from probability theory. We apply it in business. Not only that, though, I could say even more. Now, I have a 67% confidence that the sales will be between $776.39 and $1,223.61. But I do know even more. I know that if I draw that probability distribution, and there's your mean, between the mean minus twice sigma and the mean plus twice sigma, 95% of the distribution lies in there. So I could take 1,000 minus 2 times $223.61 and on up to 1,000 plus 2 times $223.61, and I would be 95% sure that the sales number would fall in that interval there. The numbers come out to be sigma minus 2 times 223.61 is $552.79. And the sigma plus to mu plus sigma twice sigma comes out, if I did that right, 1447.21. So there you go. I'm 95% sure that confident, don't say sure, that's sloppy of me. I'm 95% confident that the cash, that the revenues will come in between $552.79 and $1,447.21. Notice, in order to be more confident, I'm going to have to be fuzzier. You see that? I was only 67% sure on the tighter interval. I'm 95% sure on the wider interval. And I could do it one more time, too, just for the sake of the illustration. If I look at a normal curve in probability theory, from between the mean minus 3 times sigma to the mean plus 3 times sigma, 99% of the distribution lies. So from 1,000 minus 3 times 223.61 up to 1,000 plus 3 times 22361, I can be 95, 99% confident I'm going to fall in there. That would come out to be 32918. Now on the top side, that should come out, if I did my calculation, 1670.82. I'm 99% sure that my cash, my revenues will be between $329.18 and $1,670.82. Again, I've got greater confidence, but I've got a fuzzier, wider interval. That's just the way it is. That's the nature of it. There you go. That's the first round. So the mean is all that expected value. That's obviously useful. The standard deviation is actually a good, nice thing if for confidence intervals. But there's a problem with sigma as a measure in and of itself of volatility. It does measure volatility, the spread of your cash flow. But it has the defect that it is completely dependent upon your levels of cash flow. Sigma would be a big number for a big revenue, and it would be a small number for a small revenue. What we would like is a number that we could look at as a volatility metric that we could compare across companies, across industries, across time. That would be a superior measure, because then we could compare a medium-sized company that had, say, revenues in the millions with a bigger company that had revenues in the hundreds of millions. That's why we go to this last measure, which is the one that is crucial for this class today. It's called the coefficient of variation, CV. It's really easy to calculate. You just take the standard deviation divided by the mean. That will scale the standard deviation by the expected value of the cash flows. So you got a big sigma for big cash flows, but you also have a big expected value. So that will scale that one down so that it would be comparable exactly to a smaller company. There's one thing that's very, very extremely cool about CV, because you see, sigma is in dollars, mu is in dollars, so the dollars would cancel out. This is a percentage. We can multiply it by 100, and we're looking at a percentage. So this is like a percentage volatility measure, and that's when it gets to be something that is useful to us, very useful to us. Because what's going to happen next here is I'm going to give you a worksheet here. And this isn't something that I'm collecting. This is something I want you to do with me partway through, because you'll see some things that are happening. When we get a CV, then we start to see what we call leverage effects. So take just one. Don't be greedy. There's plenty for everybody here. I always feel like a candy man handing out candy when I do this. Here you go. Grab some and swing them upstairs, if you could. Yep. Grab some and just haul them up that way for me. Just hand them around. Here's one for you. You got so many souvenirs from this class, you could sell these on eBay. You know? Or not. Okay, maybe not. I'm going to hand some over here. So crank these back down the grinder. Give you one. I think there'll be some coming that way. And I'm going to give you guys here so that you can drop them down.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
You got... Are you all covered? Okay. Good. Got a few left here. Okay. you guys. Just making sure everyone catches one. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, does anyone not want to help? Okay, let me. Can you send a couple down that way? Oh, we got some coming. Oh, I see. Yeah, just go ahead and send those down that way. I'll come back around so that you can all get these. Okay, does everyone have one now? Okay. Now I can walk you through this. I just want to make sure that you can all do this. Can you hand those over to me? Thank you. Great. Okay. Now the purpose of the remainder of this is for you to be able to do this and find out that it really isn't a big sweat. It's just that you have to watch out what you're doing. This is one of the things where once you get the numbers calculated, that's when it begins to get to be a little bit interesting, because you get to see what those numbers are talking about. And in this problem, we have a volatility worksheet. We have a five-state scenario. Is that five states or is that? No, that's seven states. Jeez, that's a lot of work. Okay, now, the first thing I want to tell you is that I've given you your sales figures. Now, variable expenses in this firm, the variable expenses are going to be, let me think four. Yeah, let's 40% of sales. Your variable expenses will be 40% of sales. So practically speaking, you'll just take each of the sales figures and drop it down. So the first one, your sales, at 2% probability that your sales will be $800. If your variable expenses are 40% of that, then the variable expense cell, you would write 320 in that one. And then your operating income, because there's no fixed costs, your operating income without fixed costs would be $480, 800 minus 320. And then you just whack those down, each of those. Get those first three rows filled in. Well, the first row is filled in. And then fill in the other three rows. And keep in mind, this is really mindless what you're doing. It's not, just watch out you don't slip a number or something. As you go down. The real action begins after we get the tables filled in. Now, once you have done that, you will get down to your operating income. Your operating income across the seven cells should be 480, 600, 840, 1200, 1560, 1800, and 1920. Is that what you get? Okay, no big sweat. Now we're going to put in fixed costs. We're going to put in fixed costs. Now, I want you to put in every one of those cells, $300. It's fixed, so it would be the same regardless of your sales level. It's one of those costs that you pay whether you make anything or not. So put a 300 in each of those cells across that row that says fixed costs, or fixed expenses, I'm sorry. And then you drive it down to EBIT. Now, it will look like there's a little bit of redundance in what I'm doing here. But first of all, your EBIT should come out to be 180, 300, 540, 900, 1260, 1500, and 1620. Now we're going to look at two different things. The first of all, at the end of the day, what I'm going to show you is the effects of operating leverage on business risk. And then I'm going to show you the effect of financial leverage on business risk. I'm going to isolate them. So in the first example, what I'm going to do is I want to look at what happens if we have no interest and all that happened were fixed expenses. So in the next group of cells, I am asking you simply write down those EBITs again from just above. So all you're going to do is copy 180, 300, 540, 900, 1260, 1500, and 1620. Humor me. There's a point. Now, in the first view, we're going to say, suppose this company doesn't pay any interest. It has no interest expense. It is not a leveraged company financially. It has no financial leverage. So you write interest as zero in each of the rows below. Zero, 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 etc. And then you write your EBT, which is obviously going to be the same as EBIT because there's no interest. Now get your taxes on. It's 30%. And you'll find the taxes, just calculate your taxes on each of those scenarios. 30% of 180 is $54. Just crank them out. Humor me, again. This is the mechanical part. The interesting part comes when we actually get all these numbers done and we look at what's happening. Now, you get your net income should come out to be 126, 210, 378, 630, 882, 1050, and 1134. Right now, we're just doing accounting, baby accounting. Once you do that, we're going to do the same thing again, except we're going to, in the third block of cells, we're going to go through it again, except we're going to say, what happens if there's interest? So the first thing you do is, again, copy EBIT. The 180, 300, 540, 900, 1260, 1500, and 1620. And this time, in the interest row, I want you to write that they pay $60 in interest. Obviously, because the interest payment would not vary. So it's with the scenario, so it's going to be 60 in every cell. Now get your EBT on. You'll have 180 minus 60 in the first scenario. That's $120. Then you'll have 300 minus 60 is 240, and down the and across the grinder. 120, 240, 480, 840, 1200, 1440, and 1560. Now do your taxes again, 30% of EBT. So your first one would be 30% of 120 is 36. Then you have 30% of 240 would be 72. Just working it along there. So now we have our net income. We finished the financials themselves, the net income. And you will work your way across there. Your nets should be 84, 168, 336, 588, 840, 1008, and 1092. And that is the end of the accounting part of it. Now we turn our attention to some pound out math on it, to just beat the math out. You will see that I want you to calculate mu, sigma, and CV for the sales line. And then I want you to calculate mu, sigma, and CV for the operating income line at the top without fixed costs, and then for the EBT. Now, right off the bat, let's do time saving here. Let's save ourselves some aggravation. You know very well what is going to be mu for the sales line. What is it going to be? $2,000. Why? Not in the middle. It's in the middle of a symmetric. As long as it's symmetric, you can do that. And if you look at those probabilities, they are symmetric. The probabilities in the sales. So your mu is going to be easy in every scenario. You can just walk down the line and just get all your mu's filled in fast. Do you see that? You can just push those in right away. Your mu's will be, for the sales that are open, sales, expected value of sales is 2,000. Expected value of operating income without fixed costs is 1,200. Your expected value of EBIT in that first block of block is 900. Your expected value of EBIT, we're just copying the same thing down. In the second block, your expected value of EBT is 900. Your expected value of net income is 630. I don't even have to lift a calculator for this. And then finally, in the third block of cells, the expected value of EBT is 840, and the expected value of net income is 588. So you've got those cleared out. And now we get to the place where there's some intensity, where we have to do some work. To get the sigma for the volatility worksheet, and I'm going to save myself as much effort as I humanly can when I do this. I'm going to press in the service that thing I noticed about the doubling thing. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, for the sales line, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to take 0.02 times 800 minus my expected value, 2,000 squared, plus 0.08 times 1,000 less 2,000 squared, plus 0.20 times 1,400 minus 2,000. And I'm going to square it. I'm going to get that number, and then I'm going to double it to go over to the other side of the distribution, because I know that the numbers on the other side are going to be identical. So if I whack that thing out there, that thing, what's 2,000 minus 2,000? Gotcha. Watch it. See, I'm just saving myself time. I'm lazy. Just do it with me, just so you know that you can pull this off. So I'm going to do 0.02 times 800 minus 2,000, close parentheses squared, plus 0.08 times, open parentheses, 1,000 minus 2,000, close parentheses squared, plus 0.20 times, open parentheses, 1,400 minus 2,000, quantity squared, equals my ass. Try that again. Eight times 1,000 minus 2,000, close the parentheses squared, plus 0.2 times open parentheses 1,400 minus 2,000, close the parentheses, square it, equals. And I get 180800. Is that what you get? And now I'm going to times that by 2 to get cover the other side of the distribution. And I get 361600. And when I take the square root of that, I get $601.33. Make sure you can get this. If you can get it once, you can keep getting it. It's a repetitive thing. It's the pain in the ass part of this, but it's the part that's necessary for us to get to something that's interesting to talk about. How are you doing there? Did I get that right? Something doesn't look right about that. Did you get, is that what you got?
Yeah,
what?
If you do the standard deviation,
no, you don't want to do it on a calculator. That won't do it the right way.
If you do it that way.
Yeah, if you do it on a calculator, it can't take into account the probabilities. Yeah. See, that standard deviation, when you do it on a calculator, you're assuming that the probabilities of every scenario are identical. Yeah, I tried it myself. Believe me, I did this. I thought I could get by with it really easy. Something just does not look right about that number I got there. But, is that what you got? Okay, now, we've got the mean. Something's just wrong about that. We've got the mean. We've got the standard deviation. Now you can beat forth the coefficient of variation, which is nothing but sigma over the mean. And see what you get for the CV. You'll see a first original CV. Let me see. I'm going to pull this one up myself, see what I get. I'm going to run it through an Excel shot. See what happens when I do it that way. And make sure that I get the right numbers. Volatility. Okay, here we go. Squared. A3J3. Now, what do you get for the CV? as a percentage? 30.07%. Is that right? Okay. Now, go down and do the standard deviation for the operating income line. Oh, you use the tables, and then you set up L1, L2, and you say L3 is the probability times, and then you set up a probability table, and then you just build up the squares of them, and the squares minus the and all that. At first, it's bad, but once you set up the routine, it's good. Oh my God. C2. That would be C2. C2 there. That would be D. E and then F and then G and then H and then I. There. Copy. Okay, now what do you get for the coefficient of variation for operating income without fixed cost? Have you gotten there yet? The coefficient of variation?
Oh, no.
Oh. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? You actually get the same coefficient of variation as you did for sales. In other words, variable costs do not affect volatility as measured by coefficient of variation. So we are now saying that sales volatility is the same as operating income volatility before fixed costs. Now, once you get down to the EBIT line, I will tell you right now that your coefficient of variation will come out to be 40.09%. You know what? The difference there is what we call operating leverage. 10.02% is what we call the contribution of operating leverage to business risk. It's how much extra volatility was created by the fixed cost. And when you go from there, you go down without any interest. Your EBT in the second cluster, your EBT volatility is going to surprisingly come out to be 40.09%. In other words, if I have no interest expense, my business risk is not changed by financial leverage. Now I'm going to show you what the final numbers look like. Wanted to get you far enough so that you could actually produce this yourself to at least some extent. Let me see if I can I back this thing off again? I don't think I can. Let me do this. You can still see that, right?
Kind of.
Stop it. You need to be able to do this. And the main thing was I wanted to get you started. And I'll put up a copy of this so that you can go through it again, get some of these numbers in here. But I want you to look at what's happening here. You see that number, the EBIT, that's business risk. The coefficient of variation for EBIT is what we call business risk. Now, business risk, if there are fixed costs, business risk is magnified. We call that magnification operating leverage. Do you see how when I had no fixed expenses, my business risk did not change from the sales line to the operating income line? The fixed expenses increased my coefficient of variation. The amount by which the fixed expenses increase my coefficient of variation is called my operating leverage, or more formally, the contribution of operating leverage to business risk. Now, if you walk down and look again, if I don't have any interest expense at all, then my EBIT is the same, the CV is the same as my business risk. In fact, taxes aren't going to change my volatility because they're a variable expense. Variable expenses don't change CV. So if I look at that right now, I can say, okay, my net income is the same as my business risk. My net income volatility is the same as my business risk. But if I have to pay interest, my net income, in fact, my EBT and my net income CVs have increased. The amount by which they went up, the amount that was caused by interest expense, which is obviously a fixed expense, is what we call financial leverage. It is another magnifier. Look up at the top there. You see my sales volatility as measured by CV is 30.07%. Now, do you see how fixed expenses magnified that up to 40.09%? And then do you see how interest magnified it again up to almost 43%? That's how you get that magnification of volatility that I showed you in that those financials, like Amazon's financials. There it is right there. That's how the magnification happens. That as you get dragged down by fixed costs of operations, and then fixed costs of debt, service, that's where the magnification happens, in those two ways. And so over the weekend, I will give you a problem sort of like this and ask you for a couple of answers. And then I will also have you do some ratio stuff for the take-home quiz. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.